Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents A New Mantra by Sapna Srinivasan, narrated by Siri Scott. Chapter 1. Summer. August. It was a proud moment in the life of Meera Sood as she admired the set dinner table before her. A true work of art, completed over the course of 8 hours. Meera smiled down at it, the 7-course traditional Indian dinner she'd made from scratch. From the half-dozen samosas, to the paneer tikka masala, to the saag, the biryani, and not to forget the gulab jamuns, deep-fried dough balls dipped in sweet syrup, which alone had taken 2 hours to make. It was a meal fit for a maharaja, or, in her case, her husband of 3 years, Jay Mehta. The latter had been acting strange for many months now, and Meera had no idea why. She'd tried everything, from asking him about it, to making fresh parathas for him every morning, her mother's advice, to offering to finally take the plunge and bequeath her maiden name for his last name, an aunt's advice, to trying to start a family, everyone's advice. Meera considered this last piece of advice as she attempted to straighten out a plate. She'd spent the years of her married life shelving away her own dream of working, so she could cook, clean, and support her husband's career. Be the good Indian wife that tradition demanded. But with her turning 30, the pressure had been mounting from her family for her to have a child. And so Meera had, yet again, succumbed to her wifely duties. Did she want to be a mother? Did she think she had the chops to be a good one? Maybe. At least, she was willing to try to bring her best to the table. Clearly, having a career wasn't in the cards, so maybe motherhood was her calling. What was troubling, of course, was that Jay had been acting distant. They had vaguely tried to get pregnant, but only so much could be achieved in the absence of intimacy. Nothing had helped shake Jay out of his funk. Hence, Meera had decided to go all out. Tonight, she was determined to get to the bottom of her stale marriage. When the doorbell rang at 7, Meera bounded up like an attention-starved puppy to open it. Jay stood there with his laptop bag slung across one shoulder, and, yep, there was that ridiculous mood. She could see it as plainly as the nose on his face. "Hi, Jay." She smiled, letting him in, determined to pivot toward cheer. "Look what I made. Diwali's coming up in a few days, so I thought we could celebrate early," she said, allowing him to take in the beautifully set table with the dishes all steamy, hot, and smelling irresistible, even to her. But Jay turned and faced her instead. "Meera, we have to talk." She was glad to hear those words, because that's exactly what she wanted to say to him. "We do, Jay. Listen, I know you're stressed at work, and I'm sorry if I haven't been supportive enough, but I'm having an affair."
What?
A tsunami-like shockwave engulfed Meera from the inside out.
I'm having an affair," he repeated.
She was hearing him, but she couldn't comprehend his words.
"With a person?"
"No, a squirrel.
Of course with a person," replied Jay, shaking his head.
"Oh, my God," Meera cried out, her hand muffling her mouth.
"You're having an affair?"
She felt the earth ripple as the ground slowly began to sway under her feet. The women in her family had been prone to anxiety. Her great-grandmother's panic attacks were notorious to the point where, by the end of her life, the old woman had taken to running down the street butt naked every time her nurse tried to get her in the shower.
The genes baton passed down the generations had diluted the severity of this condition, but not enough to stop Mira from having a full-blown panic attack. Jay rambled on.
Look, I met her on an airplane about a year ago when I was on my way back to Seattle from a business trip, and we hit it off right away. I wasn't even sure what I was feeling at the time, but as the months went by, we got close, and...
Mira felt an explosion inside her head, a potpourri of shock, anger, and realization.
Oh my God, is that why you've been acting so aloof with me? Not wanting to...
She stopped short. She was a conservative Indian housewife, after all. Talking openly about their sex life, or lack thereof, wasn't second nature to Mira. She preferred to imply. Is that why you and I haven't been close in months?
Jay frowned, appearing almost confused at the insinuation.
He offered up a shrug and offloaded his laptop bag.
Mira, I'm tired of pretending. Rima just got a new job in California, which made me realize I have a choice to make, and I choose her.
The words cut through her heart like a knife.
Rima? Repeated Mira, incredulously.
All this time, she'd been picturing Jay with an uncharted blonde with blue eyes and peach-pink breasts. But the fact that he'd cheated on her with another Indian woman was humiliating, like losing a home game. Clearly, he wasn't looking for someone different. He just didn't want her.
By the time Mira surfaced from her deliberations, Jay had stomped away and was in the bedroom, packing his suitcases. Instinctively, Mira tried to stop him.
What are you doing? He scolded her.
Jay, this is crazy. You can't just leave me.
I told you, I don't want to be in this marriage anymore, Mira. I want to live my life with the woman I love, and that woman isn't you. Don't you understand?
But I gave up everything for you. My career, my family back home, my friends. I dedicated my life to you.
Jay paused midway through laying a stack of his shirts into an open suitcase.
Okay, so now I am giving you your life back.
His words sent a shiver down Mira's spine. She wasn't getting through to him, and time was running out. But giving up wasn't a choice. Her marriage wasn't the only thing on the line. Her father had, only recently, suffered a massive stroke, which had left him completely immobilized, strapped to a wheelchair, and no longer able to speak. She couldn't risk giving him another, and likely fatal, stroke with the news of Jay's affair.
I'll do anything, Jay. Please, don't leave me.
Stop embarrassing yourself, he replied waspishly, as he continued to empty his side of their closet, packing things into two large suitcases.
For the next 2 hours, Mira seesawed between pleas and reprimands.
Please don't leave me, Jay, to shame on you, Jay.
The lowest point in Mira Sood's life was, hands down, her attempt to body block her husband, to stop him from leaving her for another woman. But he left anyway, towing her heart through the mud behind him. Here, he said ceremoniously, holding up his set of keys to the apartment, along with a check for $3,000.
The rent's paid through the end of this month, and I've closed out my bank account. This is your share. It's whatever we had in there split evenly. It's generous, considering it was all my earnings.
Mira stood frozen, unable to move or comprehend the words hurtling at her like a meteor shower. Jay considered her with frightfully calm eyes, then dropped his keys and the check on a nearby coffee table. When Jay finally left, Mira sat down on the carpet with her back against the apartment door. The moment felt surreal. Her brain felt numbed by the shock. It was as if she were in a movie, suddenly playing out the life of someone else, someone she did not recognize. Because this neither looked nor felt like the life of Mira Sood anymore. This was nothing like the life she'd dreamt of for herself, the life she'd hoped to have when she agreed to marry Jay and move to America. 3 years ago, Mira had been an emotionally secure 27-year-old woman who was content with life and herself. She'd completed a BA in English, worked a few years as an academic counselor at a local school, and then at a call center. Yes, she was still living in a small town in Punjab, but she was happy. She'd never been overly ambitious, and always assumed she would eventually marry and have children. As her clock began ticking, her mother and the family elders had begun needling her to get married. "Either you find someone you want to marry, or I will find someone for you," was her mother's ultimatum. Mira didn't exactly go out of her way to find someone she could love enough to marry. There were only so many options out of the handful of men in her small town. She'd had a couple of boyfriends over the years, but none of those relationships had been serious enough to stand the test of time. So, in the end, her mother won the Find Mira a Groom race. Jay Mitha was a highly eligible bachelor living in America. "And he just became an American citizen," Mira's mother had beamed. Did Mira love Jay? No, not really. But her mother did, along with the family astrologer who had lauded the match and guaranteed its success. And considering Mira had zero excuses and zero men queued up, she was left with the no choice choice. This was the norm. Besides which, she'd absolutely no reason to mistrust Jay. He was polite to her friends. He came from a well-respected Punjabi family. He was well-settled, well-educated, and Mira knew America was the land of possibilities. She'd married Jay on account of trust, hoping love would find a way into her heart with time. She'd bungee-jumped into an arranged marriage, hoping to fake it till she made it. Lesson learned, Mira Sood. For here she was now, a 30-year-old, married but separated, Indian woman. Such a phrase didn't exist in her conservative community, a place micromanaged by age-old stigmas and family orthodoxies. As Mira sat, sobbing, she tried hard to search for a point of reference. She couldn't seem to remember anyone in her family who'd crossed the forbidden line. Not one broken marriage among the hundreds. Unhappy ones, yes, but they'd all stayed put in their nuptial prisons, preferring to slam doors and sleep in separate bedrooms, speak in sardonic tones and whispered threats, but never daring to break the sacred matrimonial pact. Mira suddenly felt overcome by shame. She felt like the failure who had dropped the baton and cost the team the race. If word ever got out about her, she'd be shunned by one and all in her family. Her parents would no longer be invited to weddings. Her mother would lose her coveted spot in the inner family circle, the place where stories of gossip not only first reached, but were freshly churned for the benefit of the masses. Mira closed her eyes, trying to shut out her panic-inducing thoughts as she slowly succumbed to a second anxiety attack. She was nauseous, dizzy, her heart raced like a spooked horse, and the walls closed in on her. In the hours that followed, she sat on the couch and oscillated between a jaded, half-awakened state and moments of involuntary sleep. Amidst her transitions, her dreams felt like flesh-and-blood reality, while everything she'd known to be real appeared to turn to smoky imaginings. It was the pain in her neck that woke her the next morning. with her head throbbing and her hair smelling like a koi pond from all the tears it had absorbed the night before, Mira zombie walked from the couch over to the window to look at the dewy world outside. The rain fell incessantly. It had been for 3 days straight. Typically, on a day like today, with the raindrops softly playing percussion on the leaves amidst a cool breeze, Mira would have taken her cue and banged out a dozen handmade kachoris, perfectly crisp pastry shells, with a sweet and spicy lentil filling. But that Punjabi Indian housewife in her had just been fired. Who was she now, without a husband to cook for? Just a woman with a ladle. Mira's head felt like it weighed a ton, so she let it slump forward to rest against the cool glass window. She had no appetite, but she knew she needed to eat something. She turned around in the hopes of finding some leftovers in the fridge. But then her eyes fell on the fully laid dinner table. It looked perfect from the outside, but on the inside, it had all turned cold. Walking over to it, Mira reached out to grab a cold samosa, which she then stuffed into her mouth with anguish. With her mouth over full, she went back to the couch and picked up her cell phone. She felt no shame in desperately calling Jay many, many times. She knew it was a mistake each time she called, but at that moment, she felt hopelessly devoid of any self-respect, so she called him. It hurt each time it went to voicemail. It hurt as she left him another message, begging him to call back. And each time she hung up, she felt even more worthless than before. At the end of it, she'd exhausted the hours in her day, finding herself on the couch again, physically beaten, and so desperately heartbroken. She wanted Jay back, even though she knew he didn't deserve her, just so this massive sinkhole he'd left behind in her life would be filled. By the end of the week, it became clear to Mira that Jay wasn't coming back. Her brain had understood, but her heart refused to comply. She continued to dash to the phone every time it rang, hoping it was Jay calling. But it never was. Mira was now a separated, unemployed, 30-year-old NRI housewife with absolutely no financial prospects and in dire need of a plan. And along with it, the answer to the universal question that follows a predicament like hers. What the hell am I going to do now? Chapter 2. When the ring woke Mira up, she could not tell whether it was the doorbell or her cell phone. She'd succumbed to a feverish, dreamless sleep at 2 in the afternoon, on a weekday. She couldn't remember which one. She was groggy, sick to her stomach, and hadn't showered or eaten anything beyond dill pickles since Jay's departure from her life 10 days ago. Or was it 11? The thing rang again, and this time Mira knew it was the door. She couldn't bring herself to answer it in her present state. She knew if she saw another human being, she would instinctively collapse into their arms and bawl her eyes out, which was precisely why she'd avoided human interaction. The visitor, however, remained depressingly persistent and rang a third and a fourth time. Pulling her sheets back over her head, Mira defiantly curled back into the fetal position and closed her eyes. But right at that moment, it hit her. Wait, what if Jay had come back? Diving out of bed, Mira dashed to open the door. When she did, her heart instantly sank to the pit of her stomach. Standing outside was her older, wiser, overachieving, all-American cousin, Sahana Sood. Sahana was 5'7", 80% of which was pure legs, and she looked radiant in her high-end corporate work clothes, dark jeans and a blue tweed jacket.
Hi, Mira tried to say, realizing the hoarseness of her own voice.
Sahana was studying her closely, almost suspiciously, so Mira tried to distract her with a compliment.
You look really nice.
And you look like a meth addict. What happened to you? Sahana frowned, inviting herself into the apartment.
I wasn't feeling very well, but I'm all better now.
She'd barely come to terms with Jay's affair and his exit from their marriage, so there was no way Mira was planning to reveal her circumstances to a cousin who, incidentally, had a tent flap for a mouth.
Well, Mom said she called you 100 times and you didn't answer your phone, so she called me at work and asked me to come check on you in case something bad had happened.
I'm sorry. Tell Mami G I'm fine, Mira replied, referring to her auntie.
While her parents lived in India, Mira's paternal uncle, her father's eldest brother, Vinod Sood, and his wife, Sharmila, lived in Seattle, Washington. Auntie Sharmila had humbly, and with quiet eagerness, assumed the role of matriarch within the Sood family with the demise of her mother-in-law, Vinod Sood's mother. All the cousins referred to her as Mummy G. Her husband was the official head of the Sood family and was referred to as Papa G.
Okay, Sahana squinted, still looking unsure. So we'll see you at the Diwali party tonight, then?
Wait, what? Mira felt her brain cramp at the reminder. She and Jay had attended Auntie Sharmila's annual Diwali party since Mira's marriage and her move to the States.
I can't go tonight. I told you I haven't been feeling well.
You just said you were feeling better. Shit. She was, officially, the world's worst liar.
I know, but I might still be contagious and I don't want to spread my germs, Mira said, feeling a sliver of pride at her quick comeback.
You and I both know my mother doesn't give a rat's ass about germs. She'll drive over here to come and get you if you and Jay don't show up tonight.
Mira breathed out.
There was more truth to Sahana's words than she cared to admit at the moment, and just when she thought her life couldn't get worse. Diwali was an epic festival in India, regardless of which part of the country one was from. Back home, in northern Punjab, where Mira was from, the Diwali celebrations at her grandparents' colonial-era farmhouse lasted days. The women in the family would pool their culinary talents to create the most amazing feast, while the men would decorate the entire house with diya lamps and burst firecrackers all through the night. It was precisely why Mira eagerly anticipated Auntie Sharmila's Diwali party each year. It reminded her of a past she loved and missed. The clock said it was time to get out of the car, the Honda Jay had been given as part of Mira's dowry when she married him, and which he'd thankfully left behind when he'd left her for another woman. Mira had been sitting there with the engine running for the better part of an hour, unable to bring herself to step out. Every fiber of her soul ached, and then some. All she wanted to do was remain curled up under sheets. The very last thing she wanted to do was nosedive into her auntie's Diwali party with a bunch of overexcited, hollering, tirelessly noisy relatives.
God give me strength, sighed Mira to herself as she unbuckled her seatbelt and ascended the walkway to her auntie and uncle's lavish waterfront house right on Lake Sammamish.
God, she could hear the Bollywood beats through the 3-inch-thick Craftsman front door.
Auntie Sharmila answered.
Mira, she cried, and engulfed her before the latter could respond.
Namaste, Mami G.
Mira smiled and bent over to touch her auntie's feet, as was the custom. She then handed her the large box of barfi she'd brought along with her, as it was traditional to bring a sweet or savory dish to a house party.
"Bless you loads, my dear," replied the older woman. She was dazzling in her magenta-colored chiffon sari. Enormous earrings dangled from her earlobes, and she wore a double-string diamond necklace that Mira was convinced cost more than her Honda.
"Is Jay parking the car?"
Auntie Sharmila inquired, her eyes immediately darting past Mira.
"No, he couldn't come, Mamiji. He had to work late."
Mira felt sick. It was like a horse kick to her stomach, trying to pretend as if everything was hunky-dory when her life was on fire.
"Who works on a Friday night? And so late?"
Auntie Sharmila pulled Mira into the house and continued to chatter up as she led her to the living room. The place looked beautiful, decorated with marigold flowers and diya lamps. The smell of incense and fried food filled the air. It took every ounce of Mira's willpower to keep the tears at bay. Everything around her reminded her of her home in India. The house was bursting with Suds and non-Sud relatives, and they cried out in cacophony when they saw Mira. First cousins, second cousins, cousins she was sure she didn't know who they were, and a bunch of aunties and uncles who were, in some way, shape, or form, connected to either Uncle Vinod or Auntie Sharmila.
"Mira, you're here!"
"Happy Diwali!"
"Oi, Mira!"
A few aunties came up to her, and she greeted them cordially.
"Oh, you look lovely in that sari, Mira,"
they said, complimenting the meager effort she'd made that night to look as presentable as her bleeding heart would allow. The last thing she wanted was to succumb to her instincts, show up in pajamas, and raise suspicion.
"Thank you,"
she tried to smile back. She was gritting her teeth so hard, her eyeballs were cramping.
"Come, come, Mira,"
Uncle Vinod smiled. His accent was evenly split between his decades in America and his grounded Indian roots, rather contrary to Auntie Sharmila, who somehow managed to sound more American than Dolly Parton.
"Namaste, Papaji."
Mira bowed to touch his feet, to which he first blessed her, then pulled her up into his arms.
"Good to see you, Mira."
Vinod Sood was a tall, broad-shouldered man in his late 70s. He was the oldest of three brothers, Vinod, Mukesh, and Sanjay Sood. In the mid-1960s, Vinod, along with his wife Sharmila, left the Sood family home in Punjab, India, and flew on the newly inaugurated International Air India flight to the United States of America in search of the American dream. He found a job as a shorthand typist while taking night classes in computer coding. He then found a job at a startup tech company as a junior coder and worked his way up, eventually retiring as its CEO. Within the first decade of living in the U.S., Uncle Vinod had also managed to facilitate getting green cards for his entire family. And by the time immigration audits discovered the system's loophole, every single living member of the Sood family, including Vinod's younger brothers, Mukesh, Mira's father, and Sanjay, their wives, and kids, all had a shiny green card each. Although Mukesh and Sanjay continued to live in India, they kept their green cards alive with periodic and extended visits to the States.
"Where's our son-in-law?"
Uncle Vinod frowned, looking about Mira. At that very moment, Sahana Sood got up from her seat on the couch and began walking in their direction. Mira was giddy with anxiety. This wasn't going to be easy. She knew that well enough. She'd somehow managed to keep her separation from Jay and his affair a secret from her family thus far. But it wasn't a question of whether they would find out. It was a question of when. The Soods, especially her auntie Sharmila, not to mention her mother, Nina Sood, and almost all the cousins in their family, were hot and heavy on social media.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?